Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
In the dark, I played my dream.
Welcome to episode 368 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Oh yeah, good to be here with y'all. Well, here we are. This episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest. Yeah, take care of all your needs yourself, if you possibly can. Whatever you can't source, go check out Heaven's Harvest. You're going to be glad you did. All right, man. Sorry, I'm a little bit late, y'all. I literally had to run up here because I had to hurry up and swallow some food and then try to make it up here in time. So, just bouncing, juggling, all kinds of crazy stuff going on right now. How's it going with you, son?
Pretty good. Just busy as always, trying to do internet content. Today, I edited a video. You can see the Trivium back here on my board. I edited a video, the weather manipulation, and I used the Trivium. I went through the who, what, when, where, why, and how, or the how and why, to show that weather manipulation is a real thing. It's not super detailed. It's not super in-depth. All it does, the point of the video is to only prove to you that this is going on. There's still a bunch more research to go into.
Yeah, I've just got finished watching it. Your mom said, she said, hey, you need to watch this thing because I don't get notifications from my own son. How about that? YouTube doesn't even give me notifications when you put up a video. And honestly, last couple of videos, people were saying, well, man, I thought you jumped off. I haven't gotten a notification in 2 years or something like that. So folks are playing games. But anyway, y'all need to go over there and check out that video he did. I thought it was great. So in a nutshell, what William did in that video, and he did it at a very cursory level, but it was very, very thorough in its own way, in that he used, look, throughout time and memoriam, the way to make yourself to have a mental antivirus. Now, there are some that actually naturally do it, but not everybody does. It's called the Trivium. It's Latin. It means three roads. In fact, when you were a Roman slave, let's say, you were not allowed to be taught this because without it, you are rendered I'll put it this way. If you can read a book, that's wonderful. But without having some frame of reference in whether or not what you're being told is true or not, just renders you a higher functioning slave, okay? And that's what the Trivium does, is that it trains your mind to have a natural, to have what your built-in natural BS detector come to the fore. That's why it was illegal to teach Roman slaves the Trivium. Now, the first thing you were required to do if you ever purchased your freedom, which you could do as a slave, first thing you were to do was to purchase an education in the Trivium. Like I said, it stands for three roads: grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Under grammar, it's who, what, where, when. The logic is why, and then the how is the rhetoric. Can't get into all of it right now. We've talked about it before in the past, but I was never taught it. I'll bet money nobody in this audience was ever taught it. Guaranteed nobody in this audience was ever taught it. When I first heard it, it was from a guy named Jan Irvin. So I went out, looked up all the information, had to teach myself how to do it. And then when I went back and then I looked at things that, let's say, circa Civil War time, like, for example, the Lincoln-Douglas debate, you can literally hear one another in that debate. When you look at the transcripts of that debate, they're calling each other out on logical fallacies. Now, what they do in modern time, remember, it has to be in this order: who, what, where, when, why, and how. You don't move on unless you can find zero contradictions in the who, what, when, and where. Once you have the answers to those questions without contradiction, then you go into the why. Once you have those answers, you go into the how. And then everything that you find as contradictions are basically logical fallacies. Once you either train yourself or you get an understanding on this, it enables you. You will never see the world again, ever the same. You never will. And in a nutshell, what William did was break down stratospheric aerosol injections or chemtrails, and he broke it down very easily, just doing the who, what, where, when, why, and how, and in that order. So, yeah, folks, yeah, son, you did a fantastic job, man. Your mom was telling me, I literally, that's part of why I was late. Yeah, so I was finishing up the end of it, and I thought you did a bang-up job. I thought it was great.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Videos like that take forever to edit, though. That took a long chunk of the day. Whenever you have a bunch of like clips and documents to include, those videos take forever.
Yeah, they do. That's exactly where I'm at right now. I'm trying to get better at these front porch talks, and you know, put in better. You know, if you talk about it, you should kind of show it if you can, if that's all possible. And honestly, I'm just trying to find the bandwidth to be able to do that, because I just put out that potato. I literally filmed that potato video today and put it out today. So, you know, I know a lot of other people that do YouTube content, man, they spend 8 hours in editing. Folks, that ain't me. No. That ain't ever going to be me. I can't do that. I don't have the bandwidth. Frankly, I don't know what else you could possibly get done when you spend that much time in editing. It ain't like YouTube's paying me anything. So, I mean, and honestly, I'm just putting out the content for the people out there that want the content, don't want the fluff. There's a whole lot of people out there that are addicted to fluff and stuff like that. Well, I ain't that guy. So, I'll just be dropping the truth, dropping the bombs, and then hopefully you stick around for it. All right. Want to give a shout out to Renewed Homestead, as always, working that chat. And thanks, Denise, for putting that up there. I'll put it on the screen for everybody. So that's William's channel, the permaculture consultant. And folks, want to give everybody a hat tip for being here. Sorry, it can't be on the permaculture Permapastures Farm channel, because honestly, folks, they're looking for anything. In fact, your mom tried to monetize the permaculture Pimpcast channel, and it said, I'm paraphrasing, but basically said, nope, can't monetize this channel because it provides harm to the people out there. It could.
What?
Yeah, that's exactly what it, or something along that line. Yeah. So, yeah, meanwhile, I can take you from the top of my head. I could probably fill volumes with all the channels out there that are quite literally doing that very thing. You know, hey, let's eat these Tide Pods or whatever else and see what happens. It's just nonsensical garbage. So, hey, folks, you know, you're right over the target when you're dealing with this kind of stuff. All right. So, finally got those potatoes, y'all. I'll cut to the chase and kind of give you what's in that video. So here it is. Getting these guys out of the ground is more than 2.5 months late. 2.5 months late.
Yep.
And I got it. And honestly, we planted them. I, just to kind of give you a backdrop, I should have got them picked up in about the middle of July. And we just kept getting swamped. I mean, every single day would be something. So we never got around to it. And then to a certain point, I was like, man, I wonder how far, because then I could tell they had died back the first time, and I knew it was time to get them. And then all of a sudden I could tell, oh, shoot, they're reseeding again. They're growing all over again. Okay, we'll let them go and see how long we can go. And it turned out to be, I guess, to a certain extent, an experiment. And I was wanting to know, from a preparedness standpoint, could you kind of leave those potatoes in the ground and then get them when you were able or when you had room for them? So that's exactly what we did. And you know what? I'm actually quite shocked. I knew this soil was absolutely awful. I knew it wasn't going to do a whole lot because we bought that garbage to make a point. The initial intent when I put it in there, we put up those Vigo boxes. They're 4x8 boxes and they're 2 feet tall. The idea was take that garbage. I don't even know that you can call it soil. Take that garbage compost they sell or that topsoil, whatever it was. It's all garbage. And fill up these boxes and see if we can remediate it at the same time while we're doing potatoes. We looked at it under the microscope, had nothing but bacteria in there. It was, and some of it didn't even have that. So you know that it's sterile when you have absolutely nothing else in it. So anyway, went in there, looked at it. Okay, it's awful. So then the idea was to go ahead and remediate it with soil saviors and also my biocomplete compost. Well, life got in the way and we just kind of neglected it. I said, okay, we'll just let it go and see. Finally got them out today. So I used one bucket of seed potatoes to seed 4 4x8 beds. Okay. Yeah. Did that make sense? Yeah. One bucket of seed potatoes to seed 4 4x8 beds. And I guess when you get down to brass tacks, son, I filled up six buckets with the harvest. So dang. Yeah. So
that's pretty good.
And it was neglected. I mean, yeah, it was good, but I wonder if I would have stayed on top of it, you know, putting out either extract or whatever the case, if I'd have stayed on top of it, I think we could have doubled that easily in a bed that size, especially when it's 2 feet deep. So yeah, still got a reasonable harvest out of it and really didn't put a whole lot in there. So remember all those classes William talked about yield. And honestly, I guess, you know, put in a bucket, took me, I don't know, 20 minutes to sow it all, and then took maybe an hour to reap it. Yeah, son, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's an awesome yield. If you take, especially if you, did you guys water those beds at all?
No.
So there's not even time in as far as that goes. There was like very, very little calories put into that system. To produce six times, you basically produce six times what you put into that system, which by any other method of measurement or any other field, that's a pretty good return of investment.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it was a total, I mean, it was neglection 101. And honestly, you can get away with that when your soil's good. But this soil, it wasn't even soil. I mean, this stuff was garbage. We hit it with one application of soil saviors, I think. Maybe two, a couple, maybe, I don't know, maybe four at the very most. And it was basically used as a leftover from other stuff and didn't touch it again. So technically, this thing should not have produced anything. So now what I've done, you'll have to watch the video, but I'll show you what I do with our beds. When we're this late in the season, I mean, we are seriously in the fall right now. We got other beds where we got lettuce. I'm eating lettuce every single day, still eating little cherry tomatoes. Other things that are out of the high tunnel right now, I eat out of my garden every single day, y'all, even in the winter. So, and there's a whole variety of health reasons for doing something like that. So, to your point about the geoengineering, man, you know, this government shutdown really hasn't changed a whole lot in terms of the spraying that's going on around here. They keep spraying every night. So for the last 3 days, it'll linger throughout the day. And then, you know, at noon or so, then it clears up a little bit. But yeah, they're definitely spraying at night. I know Thomas Massey, I know where he is. He put out an X post saying, well, it looks like we need to have more government shutdown. I'm paraphrasing, but basically saying, I don't see any chemtrails. Well, there's a whole lot of people out there that are seeing them.
Yeah. Every morning for the past, I'd say since the beginning of this week, every morning has just been like, even though there's not really a cloud in the middle in between me and the sun, it still looks like it's on a dimmer. It's just like there's like a thin cloud between me and the sun. It's like it's being filtered or something. Even if there isn't like a cloud in between us, it's weird. And then it's been every morning since the beginning of this week.
Yeah, it's still going on. I mean, it's amazing how we got people out there struggling just to put anything on the table right now, but we got all kinds of extra money to put into stratospheric aerosol injections. We got money for war. We got money for all these things, but you know, we can't help out our seniors. We got homeless veterans on the street, fighting for whatever they can get, you know, In the worst, you know, they send them over to war. They lose their minds, quite literally. They bring them back. They're on the streets and no help for them. But boy, we sure have all this money to sit here and dump into geoengineering and stuff like it. So, yeah, it's a real mess. By the way,
it's no longer stratospheric aerosol injections. It's stratospheric aerosol intervention. That's what they're calling it now.
Yeah, so they have to always rewrite it. Yep. Unbelievable. Yeah, it's junk, okay? I need to come up for an acronym for junk. Other things we did around here, flipped a compost pile. And, folks, it was a finished pile. It was all said and done. But if there are times, I mean, you still got some scraps you want to stick in there, you can still do that. I mean, just make sure you got enough of it. And then just flip it again. The more you flip it, the more you're going to refine it to a certain point. But there is a point when you want to try to leave it alone, because that's when your fungus is really going to work. You don't want to disturb it as much. This is when I talk about curing your compost pile, that's exactly what I mean. Is your bacteria was doing all the heavy lifting on the front end. Your fungus really doesn't even come alive until that pile gets down to ambient temperature. When it gets down there, that's when your fungus starts saying, okay, now it's time to go to work. But they're putting fungal hypha all through that pile. And every time you disturb it at that point, there's going to be times you got to. I mean, you got to put it out. But you don't want to be doing it when it gets to that point where you're really satisfied with it. Let it sit, cover it up, make sure your moisture is good. And, you know, that's when your fungus is, and that's what everybody forgets about when you're doing this stuff. You want a high, you know, if you're going to put it on a pasture, you want about a 50-50 split between bacteria and fungi. If you're going to put it in a food forest, probably a 10-to-1 ratio, heavy on the fungi. And obviously old growth food forest can be up to 1,000 fungi per bacteria. So depending on how you use it, but usually
up
in
to
your
10,000, it can be up to 10,000. Yeah, you know, like an old growth forest system.
Absolutely. It's almost all fungus. I mean, that's exactly what you want to see in those systems. And in your gardens, I mean, I would go for a 50. It really depends on what you're growing for the most part, but you definitely want a fungal component in there. And that's how you get it, by not disturbing your soil. When you're constantly hitting it up with a tractor, or you're disking it, you're plowing it, you're doing whatever fungus you have down in there. That's why no drill, no till is the way to go in my book. Now, when you're digging up potatoes, there ain't no getting around that.
But you're not creating a compaction layer underneath that either by digging up potatoes on the scale that you're doing it.
Right. But you're still going to be disturbing things. And that's why as soon as I get it out of there, y'all, cover crop's going straight down. And if I didn't want to do a cover crop, another good method you could do is, let's say you do have a raised bed and you don't want to fool with it from out the fall or the winter. William, do you want to talk about, I don't know who came up with this thing with putting the plastic over the gardens, man. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, it's garbage. Yeah, stop putting plastic over your gardens. In fact, I just did a consultation not too long ago of a family. They were told to put the plastic down by another like popular permaculture designer, and it made no sense. It suffocates the soil. It cuts off the oxygen respiration going on with the soil because they no longer have access with the air. Anything coming in contact with that plastic is going to go anaerobic. You're stopping any new water entering the system, and you're just kind of like recycling the same water over and over again. It's not good, especially like it's effective. I will say it's effective at getting rid of weeds and clearing some ground for you. But there's much better ways that don't set you back once you're ready to start growing. That is like you're clearing everything and then you're taking like 5 steps back. Or you could go a different route and then immediately start taking steps forward and building your soil health. Cardboard is much better than plastic. Bless 360 was saying. So the cardboard is better. Absolutely. Because the cardboard will start breaking down and, it's going to attract worms like crazy, but it's going to start breaking down and start feeding your soil microbes. The plastic isn't. It's killing everything because it's too high a temperatures for too long for the aerobic bacteria and the aerobic organisms to survive. So it's killing everything. And the thing that's going to inhabit that vacuum first and fastest, since it's an anaerobic condition, are the anaerobic microbes. So taking steps, 5 steps backwards, or you could go a different route with cardboard and take 10 steps forward. And then Joseph says, does cardboard have glue in it? Yeah, but I don't really care. As far as the glues, the only thing I'll take off the cardboard is the tape. As far as the glues and the dyes, I don't really care. The organisms can deal with those toxins, if there are any, and then lock them up in carbonic acids. And then the dye is mostly soy-based anymore, so there's no issue there. Our microbes can handle all that.
Yeah, through the composting process, you're not even going to have to worry about that glue or some of the other stuff. I mean, if you have a healthy system. But man, I don't understand for the life of me why. And I think Justin Rhodes started it. Another reason I want to smack him around. I think he was the one that started doing that plastic in the garden. I'm like, okay, man, I thought you were a permaculture designer, man. This is the worst thing you can do in your garden. You might think it's going to get you to the other side, but folks, okay, look at my gardens. I don't weed ever. I don't weed a garden ever. You know how I go to get about it? You know how I go about it? Here's a method. Just like William said, and I kind of talk about it in the latest video I put out. Put down 4 sheets of cardboard, and some of this, the cardboard's also a barometer to tell me how alive my soil is. Because if you put that cardboard now and it's there by the end of winter, then you know you got a long way to go. The cardboard around these places where I am, even in like those boxes where I got lousy soil, like William said, you now have all of your beneficial aerobic microbes, man. You are going to Kentucky fry them when you put plastic over there. It needs to breathe. And number 3, you don't see it in nature. Number 4, don't we already have enough microplastics in the world? I mean, I don't putting out silage tarps out here. I'm like, this is the worst thing you can do when you could be, son, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the best times to build soil is over the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you have snowpack, because that's where the highest decomposition rates occur, is underneath snowpack, where you have consistent temperature and consistent water application. Hey, Alabama also said that Haas also recommends plastic covering. That's fine. Haas doesn't claim to be a permaculture designer.
Yeah, you got a point there.
That's the egregious part of it, is that Haas ain't claiming to do any of this, okay, as far as like permaculture goes.
Tell Haas, let's do a little, son, this might be a video you might want to do. Go ahead and do a microscope sample, and I would love to tell Haas this. I mean, Haas is, you know, they do have some good tools, and they got some good products and stuff like that. I like Haas, to make no mistake about that. I really do. But they're probably only providing what the market is telling them what they need. That's probably why they're telling everybody to do it. Because I guarantee you, do this little experiment, folks. And William, this would be a pretty good video if you wanted to do it. Take a little 4x4 area, cover it up, stake it down with plastic. Take another 4x4 area, cover it up with cardboard, and then put a foot of mulch on top of it. Check both of them after the season. I mean, you could separate them by 5 feet. Check both of them after the end of the season, and you show me which one is aerobic and has unbelievable amounts of life in it just by putting carbon on the surface. If that works so well, if that's such a reasonable method, then why not do our whole pastures the same way? It is the most asinine thing I've ever seen in my life, and everybody keeps saying to do it. It is the worst thing. I'm telling y'all, I could fill volumes with all the reasons why you should not be doing that, because you're killing everything that's beneficial to you. Yeah, you might see a blessing on the back end, but it is not at all sustainable. And let me also ask you, you ever seen the good Lord put that in nature? And any day of the week, I challenge Haas or anybody else, go out there, do a side-by-side microscopy of the one covered in plastic and the one covered in wood chips. But folks, back to my point about why I never have to weed my garden is because my new garden rises on the ashes of my old. So in one example what I'm talking about out here, I'm going to try to make sure we don't get sidetracked on this too much, but this is important, especially this time of year where people are kind of putting their gardens to bed. There's only 2 ways I'm going to go about it. One is I'm going to grow a cover crop out there. Okay, and in my case, I've used seeds that are very much hardy in the winter, whether it's winter pea, oats, crimson clover. All those things should easily last in a 3,000-foot elevation winter right here in Western North Carolina. And I put it in with enough time for it to kind of take root. Okay. So I got that off and running. Now, when spring rolls around, believe me, I planted this so thick that there shouldn't be a whole lot of room for anything that the weed suppression is going to be in there already. Those daikon radishes that I got growing up in there, I'm not going to harvest those. I'm going to leave them in the ground. They will be worm castings after a while. If you doubt me, go out there, put them in your pasture, put them everywhere. Besides, daikons don't taste that great anyway unless you pickle them. So, yeah. I mean, they're not good regular radishes anyway. I mean, I will eat them. I mean, they're all right if you roast them or whatever, but they do a bigger service for me by being in the ground. They're going to bust up that, they're going to flocculate to a certain extent some of that soil and some of the clay out there. But also, it's something for your ruminants to eat. And also, once they do that, now all my worms can eat. Because if you go back there and look, you're probably going to find a casing where a radish once was. Anyway, I'm going to go out there, put in this cover crop. When spring is, you know, when I'm about a month out from planting, if I have time and remember, I will go out there, chop and drop everything. Leave it right there in place. Let it decompose. Month later, coming out of that same bed, I will put in my plant starts or whatever the case may be. Put in my furrow, put in some seeds, whatever the case may be. And when I say my, I'm usually talking about your mom, but that's how it'll go. Or plan B. What would nature do? What's happening right now in nature? It's fall. All the leaves are falling to the ground. Nobody fertilizes a forest out there, wherever you are. How does nature do it? Drops the leaves. That carbon layer is now part of what's feeding that forest. So why not replicate what we see in nature? So cover it up with a cardboard. You get these really awesome fast carbon pathways, cover it up with some cardboard, cover it up with some mulch. Rain, and like William said, if you get snow and you got snowpack, that's where you're going to build the most soil. So you have this opportunity in a big way. To really, really move the needle in your garden. But folks, I don't weed ever. I hate weeding. So what do? As soon as that garden's done, as soon as I'm done harvesting whatever's out there, I will put another garden right on top of the previous one, which means I'll either chop and drop it. I'm not going to pull anything out of the ground unless it's some root vegetable or whatever. I will literally cut it off, throw a bunch of cardboard down, and put a bunch of straw or hay that my chickens have already gone through. They'll get all those weed seeds out of there or those hay seeds out of there. I'll put that on top of the cardboard and then start me another garden on top of that. Not only are you building soil at a record pace, you're doing it because William, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. If you put in that garden and you spend a whole lot of time weeding, well, that's kicking into your, you got to count for that time.
Yeah, your yield, but also not just the time, but the investment that went into buying that fertilizer and stuff. Like, hey, Alabama had a comment earlier about Hoss and Danny both being good gardeners. And yeah, there's no doubt about that. Danny from Deep South, there's no doubt about that. And not saying that these other methods don't work. They just don't fit and I've said this before in other videos, that it just doesn't fit my criteria. I'm looking for things that are going to better the soil and in the long run, remove me from as much as possible. So me having to apply fertilizers year after year doesn't remove me from the system, or even multiple times a year doesn't remove me from the system. It also makes me dependent. My food system is now dependent on outside inputs. But if I can set my soil up in a way where it doesn't need any outside inputs, then my food system is independent from outside inputs. They both work. I'm not saying these other methods don't work. You will get food production from these other methods, but look at how much more was put into producing that food compared to the food produced in healthy, full-blown soil. And then also, she said that Danny tried organics one year and it didn't work, so he didn't do it again. I think there were some other factors involved, including like fire ants and stuff like that. There is expected to be like a 5 to 7 year transition between, or the 5 to 7 year transition.
Okay. I don't know if you cut out or I did. All right. We'll just give it a second here. I really don't know what's going on. Maybe the powers that shouldn't be. If y'all can hear what I'm saying, give me a thumbs up in the chat. I don't know which one of our feeds got cut. but it definitely seems like it's on his end. Look, while we're waiting for him, okay, Ann says, I can hear you. Okay, let me just kind of, yeah, William definitely cut out. So maybe he was hitting on something the powers that shouldn't be don't want him to talk about. So let me just put it this way. When, yes, and I'm glad that came up because now I have to qualify it. When you use these plastic stuff, you are now on the, well, you're always going to have to use it. You're always going to need it. You're always going to be in that position where you have to use fertilizer created through the Haber-Bosch process. Look, I'm doing everything I can to remove, like what William said, to remove myself out of that, not only that personal system of mine, but also the reliance on any kind of fertilizers out there. You are always going to have to do it as long as you're putting down plastic in that garden, folks. That is a fact. So every single time you're going out there putting that stuff, I mean, you know, other heroes in the space like Stefan Subkoviak, he uses plastic in his. And that's all well and good. But if you knew the full reason why he uses plastic, because where he is in Canada and his permaculture orchards, it is cost prohibitive for him to use any kind of mulch because he's in the plains. There isn't a whole lot in terms of, all right, son, it looks like you're back with us. But in Stefan's case, it looks like there isn't, because I asked him about it when I was up in Canada, there isn't any option for him to be able to use any carbon pathways. So he opted for plastic. I'm not saying they don't have applications. I think it's one of the worst choices out there because you're always going to be on the system. And I'm as much in the preparedness as I am in the permaculture. I need self-licking ice cream cones. I can't be going down and hitting up the farm store every single time I need something. Looks like you're back in the saddle.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was. The Wi-Fi was working on everything but my computer for some reason. And working on everything other than StreamYard.
Well, how about that? Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm glad we covered that plastic thing because, like I said, I mean, we can do side-by-side comparisons. If we can look, and the reason why people are needing fertilizer or they feel like they need the fertilizer is because I guarantee if we do a soil microscopy, we look under there, I guarantee you everything in that soil is dead.
Yeah, everything. Depending on how long they've been doing it, how many years they've been doing it back-to-back. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can go ahead and put the NPK in there at sufficient levels. But folks, okay, you think NPK is the only thing that your vegetables and your, you think that's the only thing they need? If you do, I'd say you're a little naive because they need considerably more than that. And the only way to get it is when your bacteria and your fungi break down aggregates, soil aggregates, whether it be salt, silt, or clay, doesn't even matter. Unless your microbes are in there breaking it down, folks, we have no man-made way to equal what they do. Son, am I wrong?
No. And saying plants only need NPK is the equivalent of saying your body only needs protein, carbs, and fats. That's the equivalent. No vitamins, no minerals, nothing like that. Just protein, carbs, and fats.
Yep. If you were to just get that's a very good parallel, son. That's exactly where I'd go with this. So, I know we're at that time of year where everybody's going to be doing their final harvest, or maybe they got some, you know, you got some pumpkins or whatever, you got anything that's coming up. You know, this is part of also the part of the year I love where it's going on apple season, because why do I love apples so much? Number one is a nostalgic thing for me. Because when I was a kid growing up in rural Pennsylvania, apple season was magical to me because my first ever field trip, and I think I talked about this. I remember telling Joel about it one time when he asked me why I got into farming, is I remember like it was yesterday being in a fifth grade field trip. And if anybody my age remembers that when you went on a field trip, you couldn't sleep the night before, especially when you were where we were. We never went anywhere but to school and church. That was it. So we never went anywhere. So whenever there was a field trip, you couldn't sleep the night before because you were so excited about the next day. Well, I remember as a little child going into this Amish, it was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Yeah, other people will pronounce it Lancaster, but it's Lancaster. Anyway, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And we go on this field trip, and it's this old wooden cider house. And just like yesterday, I can smell the wood. I could see this guy that just looked, I remember he just looked friendly, you know. He was an Amish guy, I think. And I remember the smell more than anything. It was the wood more than it was the sourness of the apples that were being pressed in there. And I remember they gave us a little Dixie cup or something like it. And we drank some of this. And I remember thinking, wow, this is so great. I remember, you know, being able to go over there and pick some of the apples and eat them right there. And they tasted so much different. And that's where this time of year is so nostalgic to a certain degree for me, because, you know, you get candied apples. Of course, growing up, we never ate candy. We never, only candy I ever ate growing up is, you know, you may find a penny or a nickel on the sidewalk, and we went down, walked down to Mary's store, and you could buy little pieces of candy for a penny a piece. Or the other times we ever got candy was when my grandma would make molasses candy. That was the only candy I ever ate growing up. I mean, we didn't eat out. We didn't do any of those things. Saying all that to say that we're in that time of year that is very, for me, it's very nostalgic. Very sad too, but that's another podcast as well. But it's very nostalgic, very, very sad. But also it's that time where a lot of other people are going to be, you're getting those apples at that time of year where pretty much it's the only sweet thing growing. And think about apples. You know, they great good. They go great with savory dishes. They also grow great with sweet dishes. And they grow, I mean, there's so many wonderful things. That's why I'm so nostalgic about apples. But when you, going back to this whole thing, when you're in this time of year and now things, now you're starting, if you're eating more in the circadian health, you're eating things that were either fermented, put back a little bit, and you're also spending a little time eating, you know, what's on those trees in terms of apples and stuff like that. And folks, I'm just telling you, you can go ahead and use that plastic if you want to. You feel like it saves time? Well, just do a side-by-side comparison. Just, you don't even need a microscope. Take a 4x4 area, cover it up with black plastic, and take another 4x4 area, cover it up with four layers of cardboard and about a foot of mulch. Let it go the entire winter. Just do it. Try that experiment. Find out which one of those beds is in by the end of the winter. And the reason why so many people need so many inputs is because you've killed all of the bacterial fungi. Well, the bacteria may have survived, but the fungi, nematodes, protozoa, and definitely all your earthworms on those hot days, I guarantee these guys are not going to want to be there. So if we could have beaten the horse anymore, I don't know what that would have been, son.
Yeah, I think we put a stamp on that one.
Yeah, well, I hate plastic. I mean, it has its place, but I'm not a big fan of it. All right, y'all. So we're going to jump right into, you know, some of the news we got out there. Sovereign Health Summit. Remember, that's that one we're putting together along with Mountain Readiness. And it's going to be in October next year. We got Barbara O'Neill on lock and a number of others that compliment her. Folks, nobody has ever really put a festival like this together, and it's not only the people that inspire me in terms of my health, but also in terms of the soil. So big movers and shakers out there, you're going to be introduced to some people, and you're going to want to be there for that. So, and it's as low priced as we can possibly make it. So you want to start getting your head on that one right now. It's going to be in Harmony, North Carolina, actually in the very same location as Mountain Readiness, which is October 17th through the 19th. Harmony, North Carolina, Van Hoy Campground, and it is going, like I said before, it is the best festival you don't know about. Best instruction, and I am just floored at how many people do not know about what's going on out there, so go check them out. I'm going to be out there as a student myself. Coming up here in a couple of weeks, William and I are going to be at the Healing for the Ages Conference. That's going to be in Dallas. Perma will get you 30% off there, and we are thoroughly looking forward to it. And we're going to, you know, I don't know how much access we're going to have, but hopefully get to have interviews with a lot of those movers and shakers out there as well. This episode also brought to you by Richardson Nutrition. For all of you people out there that might be, I've had him on the program in the past, but we had to do it on Rumble because YouTube will not allow somebody on here that is talking about real solutions and how to heal yourself from some dreadful, one of the worst diagnoses is you can hope you never get, and you can avoid a lot of it just by looking into something called Bravo 17 and also something called, they're basically seeds over there. We got a 2-week suspension last time we brought them up. Can't even tell you what these apricot seeds will do. But if you want some, go over there. Perma will get you 10% off. And then finally, Wave Watch. Now, I got a different watch on right now, y'all. I'm doing another experiment right now. But Wave Watch, if you want one of those, Billy 100 will get you $100 off of that one. Can't yet tell you about this one yet. And I got to be, look, it does a whole series of other things other than the Wave Watch. Not going to talk about it yet because before I bring anything to y'all, believe me, I am thoroughly testing this thing. But
is it the same company?
It's a different company altogether.
Gotcha.
Different company altogether. And what it's meant to do is mitigate a lot of the harmful radiation that's around you. So far I've had this thing on for 2 days and I'm kind of blown away with what, I mean, I've mitigated supposedly the whole house with this thing. I'm just going to give it a few more days because I don't recall my sleep ever being this good. And I'm just going to make sure, I'm going to give it a long time and then I'm going to remove everything, see if it goes crappy. So yeah, I'm giving this thing a real college try, but we'll talk about that one in the future, folks. I don't try to keep anything from you, but at the same time, I don't want to tell you about this thing and then have egg all over my face because I kind of, you know, did a ready, fire, aim type thing. All right, so we have limited time left, so we're not going to go over the good news. Actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and do that real quick because I got some stuff in here. We won't spend much time on it. Well, that's usually...
Yeah,
all right, so we'll see. Yeah. Good news. Historic Gaza ceasefire agreed as Trump announces hostage release and Israeli withdrawal. Now, that just came out the same day. I just saw the Israelis are sitting there mowing down Palestinians today.
How many times have we heard the same phrase in the headlines? It's like every other week they're saying like ceasefire and hostage agreements and stuff like that. It happens all the time.
Yeah, right now it's looking like it may be happening, but I'm like, man, they were just shooting at, they were just mowing those guys down today in Gaza. And I'm like, and then people are talking about giving Trump the Nobel Peace Prize. Am I in an alternate reality here? Do we not know who gave the Israeli all those weapons to murder these people? I mean, what planet am I living on? Nobel Peace of Crap Prize is what they ought to call it. Because, you know, you give it to Obama, and look what he did. And then you give it to this guy. I think they even gave it to Henry Kissinger for crying out loud. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, hope and pray that there comes a resolution to this. And honestly, I pray that the people responsible for this carnage, this death, are brought to justice. And I pray that the people are brought freedom, because I can't even imagine the PTSD all those little children have over there right now. All right, said I wasn't going to spend a lot of time on there, but anyway, hope and pray for peace. But every single time there's a peace deal on the table, it seems like Israel's messing it all up. All right, next one. Poor sleep is prematurely aging the brain, study reveals. Well, going back to why I'm wearing this thing again, because my sleep has been the biggest crux. There are certain things I cannot do, okay? I drink about a gallon and a half of water every single day. Now, I got to cut that off for the most part. Now, when you see me take a drink here, I usually get in all that water before 5. If I keep drinking profusely after 5 o'clock, then, you know, I'll be up all night, you know, back and forth to the bathroom. But anyway, in this study, you want to get that sleep on lock. And part of why I agreed to do this experiment right now is because my sleep has been one of the biggest problems I've had around here in terms of, going to sleep, staying asleep. One thing that helped real in a big way was going out there, making sure I see the morning sunrise. Well, when they got everything blocked out, it's kind of nearly impossible to do that. But just being outside, you do get the benefits of that. That's number one. That helped in a big way. Making sure that I'm wearing these blue light blockers at night or whenever I'm around blue light during the day. Now, there are times I forget about it. For the most part, I do remember, but there are times. Things like that help. And honestly, this little contraption on my wrist right now, I'm not going to tell y'all yet, but so far the last couple of days since I've had this thing on, now I'm not sleeping with it, but there are other mitigation strategies that you use in your bedroom as well. So far, I'm a little bit blown away. But when something works this good, my spidey senses go up because I'm like, okay, is this a placebo? And I'm kidding myself. So I need to have this verified. And honestly, using Michelle as a guinea pig unwittingly, honestly helps as well. So yeah, working on that sleep part of the quotient. That's the big hole in my game right now, and I'm getting better at it, hopefully. Okay, finally, Toyota only sold 18 EVs in Japan for the entire month of August. Okay, reason I'm calling that good news is because, folks, I got news for you. I went into those EVs, and it's kind of on the heels of the last story. There was a lady over there in Asheville. I got all the means in which to test, you know, EVs, you name it. I got magnetometers. I got it all. I went over to a lady that was over there charging her Tesla, went up to her and asked, you know, hey, I got all this equipment here. Would you mind if I test your vehicle, see what the EMFs are coming off that thing? And this is Asheville, so I could have asked her to take her car and she would have probably given it to me. Yeah. Especially being brown and all, because
like, hey, I need to borrow this.
I need my reparations, Tesla woman. She would have probably gone for it had I said that.
Yep.
So I just went over politely and said, hey, you mind if I test this thing? And folks, I am telling you, I didn't even open the door on that EV, didn't even open the door yet. And that thing was pinging the meter off the charts. As soon as I opened the door, I mean, it was already off. It wasn't no place for the meter to go. There was no place. You could not peg the meter any more than it could when I was on the outside of the vehicle. So that's what I'm saying. Unwittingly, I know, you know, these EVs are just not what they claim them to be, even though I know they have the technology that we don't need. EVs, we don't need any of this stuff. It's all sitting in, you know, these black budget programs that are already bought up. You know, they've had carburetors that could get 100 miles to the gallon years and years ago. We had cars that ran on water. Stanley Meyer, you know, go look him up. Of course, they murdered him. And there's been a number of others out there. Really good documentary on it. One of them done by Dr. Stephen Greer. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was a very good documentary talking about all these things that were well known and proven and were put on the shelf. But anyway, 18 EVs in Japan for the entire month of August for an entire nation. And I'm calling that good news because there are other reasons why they're going to say it's not good news, but I'm calling it good news because that means there's going to be some guy or gal that are not going to get Kentucky fried in an EV, folks. I've drove in one of those things one time, and it was up here in Canada, as a matter of fact. Stefan's son took me for a ride in his Tesla. Man, that thing had some get up and go like nothing I've ever seen before. That thing threw my head back in that seat. I was like, I guess there's something you can undo to really get the full power of that thing, and I think he had done it. Man, that thing put my...
I think it's a subscription. You have to pay a subscription to like unlock the full potential of your vehicle or something. It's like an extra package you have to pay for. It's like a computer program.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he said it was. And man, he hit the pedal on that thing. And man, I guess he laid off of it because he saw the look on my face because I was thinking, man, what's this thing going to do? You know? Yeah. So he's taking me out there. He took his hands off the wheel. This thing started driving itself and he's got the pedal to the floor. And I was like, yeah, dude. He saw that I was freaking out, man, because I didn't expect that kind of power coming out of that thing. But at the same time, if it means people aren't going to get Kentucky fried, and folks, I'm telling you, the stuff, the car was standing still. It wasn't even moving. And it was blowing up. Bless360 says, Dr. Greer said what? Dr. Stephen Greer had a movie about all the suppressed technologies. It's America, man. I'll have to look it up, but it was a documentary about all the suppressed technologies that we know for sure that have been around, some of them for well over 100 years, where they had cars, electric cars that never needed to be plugged in. And they had this stuff. It's proven. It was on the shelf. And, you know, the powers that shouldn't be bought them up. Go look at that movie Tucker. I can't remember the guy that was in that movie. The car was too good. So the big automakers, they were like, oh, we got to basically snuff this guy out. what did he make, like 100 of those cars, and 99 of them are still on the road, or the ones that aren't, haven't been trashed. I mean,
oh wow.
Yeah, whenever there's really awesome stuff out there, people like Stephen Meyer, or anyway, I can't think of his name. But there's a number of others out there. If you look up Dr. Stephen Greer and then look up his, I have a love-hate relationship with the guy, but if you were to go out there and look up what he's put out there in terms of a documentary, that one was very, very good, because it talked about all these suppressed technologies that are well-known, that are right there in the patent office. And in fact, all branches of the military have offices in the patent office. So if anybody ever comes in with some free energy device, they scrub it right off the bat. And this is coming from the people working at the patent office right there in the documentary. So there's a number of others out there too. Okay. So with that said, I'll look at your questions here. And also we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, don't be a wage slave. If the government simply invents money out of thin air, then why are we still paying taxes? And how can we be in debt if we print our own money? Even an elementary examination of our financial system shows how absurd it all is. An economy dependent on nonstop consumption is psychotic. I think it's actually our patriotic duty to pay as little tax as possible. Now, you can't simply just stop paying taxes, because a bunch of armed men will show up at your door and throw you in jail and seize all your assets. But what you can do, and what all of us need to do, is to reduce our tax liability. That means we use the system as it is designed to reduce the amount of tax we owe. And if you are an employee, you have almost no ability to do that. That's why our system is designed to create good and compliant employees that make just enough money to keep buying crap they don't need. But if you form a business, then you can start playing the game. Bill Mollison was a master strategist, and he knew we had to learn how to become bankers if we were going to make any real change. That's why he included multiple strategies to do just that in Chapter 14 of the Designer's Manual. There are ways to combine businesses and nonprofits with trusts to basically reduce your tax liability to almost nothing, and more importantly, reduce your personal liability. The phrase "you will own nothing and be happy" is actually a good thing, as long as you maintain access to whatever it is you want. Like Bill Burr said, you don't want to own the yacht, you just want to be invited to the party. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. And if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of the PimpCast, a remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more info on my permaculture community group, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there, man. He said it all. I mean, when you get down to brass tacks on tax, huh? Isn't it curious how Hillary Clinton for the longest time hasn't paid any taxes? Isn't it curious how people like Al Sharpton haven't paid any taxes? Somebody asked for a book recommendation, but I'll give you a documentary recommendation. It's called America from Freedom to Fascism. And it talks about that very topic and how, honestly, you are not legally required to pay taxes. Everybody seems to think we have to. Watch that documentary. Unless you live in D.C. or you work for the federal government, it may not even be working for the federal government, but unless it's you live D.C. in D.C.
Yeah.
Unless you
and live it's in only if you agree to pay taxes outside of living in D.C. As long as you don't agree to pay taxes, then there's no issues. But as soon as you fill out the tax information and you agree to pay taxes and then you don't pay taxes, that's when you have some issues.
Yeah, there's a guy named Paymon Montahea who tax law school. I can't remember the name.
Tax Freedom Law School.
Tax Freedom Law School. Yeah. He discusses this stuff at length, and it's unimpeachable. It's unimpeachable information when you get down to brass tacks on this stuff. So the real truth of it is everything we've been told. And I mean, everything. The only thing I'm 100% sure about is Jesus is exactly who he said he was. Outside of that, honestly, I question everything I've been formally told. And honestly, there was a point where I even examined that. You should examine everything. Prove it beyond all doubt. Now, there are some other things I'm absolutely sure about, but I'm speaking in generalities right now. But Yeah, when you get down to brass tacks and a lot of this stuff, man, so much of it is just it's a lie agreed upon. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, the powers that shouldn't be, they all have us. I mean, over and over again, they can print the money. So why are we paying anything? Why are we paying anything at all? Well, it's to remind you that you are a slave. You're giving away your ability to, I spent too much time on that. Anyway, EMP, EMP, so y'all, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Remember, get everything squared away in the house, EMP Shield. All right. So I want to make sure I get to this one because, water wisdom, designed for drought, flood, and everything in between. I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but you know what? When you get down to it, water is life. I know everybody says that all the time, and it can be like George Washington said about government. Come back to that. It can be a terrible servant or a fearful master, depending on how you use it. And water and every other source of energy that comes into your property has to be treated the same way. What are those sources of energy? Let's say, and I'm just off the top of my head, it could be sunlight, it could be rain, it could be wind. And I'm sure there's a number of others out there. So when you have this energy hit your property, you only have a handful of decisions you have to worry about when you're dealing with it. You can either capture it for a little while, to a point anyway. You can deflect it. You can amplify it. Let's say you put it behind a dam and, you know, that potential energy in that dam could be used to do any number of things, whether to for hydrological power or whether you use it to do work for you, turning a water wheel, whatever the case may be. There's a lot of different things you could do with that. In the best case scenarios, you can employ all three, where you capture it, deflect it, or maybe you deflect it, then capture it, and then amplify it. Maybe you can do all three in the system. And then when you're able to do that with everything you can, it creates a high degree of efficiency, of efficiency on your home, your homestead. Now, the goal isn't to control the water, it's to cooperate with it, because there's only so much you're going to wind up doing. Every drought and flood is a design problem. Well, it's a design problem, not a weather problem. Yeah. In just about every single case, it really is. It's, are you prepared for it? Or now there are times, I don't care how prepared you were, if you lived alongside the French Broad River when that engineered hurricane came through Western North Carolina, all the preparation in the world probably didn't prepare you for that river rising another 40 to 50 feet.
Even building outside of the historic 100-year flood zone, which is what you would typically do in a permaculture design, is go outside that 100-year flood zone. People did that, and then they still got wiped away.
Yeah. So that's why, and then now that you have the ability, we have and have had the ability to control the weather for a very long time. I mean, Dane Wigington plays it at the beginning of every video of LBJ, that polecat, Lyndon Baines Johnson, talking about he who controls the weather controls the world. And folks, you think technology stopped right back then? Well, it hasn't. So I don't want to get bogged down on that right now, but the idea is when that rainfall hits your property, in most cases, it's because of poor design, because of poor infiltration. What happens? Rain hits whatever structure is there, whatever field you have. And because we're not worried about putting that carbon back into the soil, it just rolls right off your property and heads on down ultimately to the Mississippi. That's what it does in a lot of places. And that's where design can make all the difference in the world. So water doesn't necessarily leave the land by choice. It's either pushed on or off by design. So there are so many, son, how important is water design when you go out there? I mean, I know it's a rhetorical question, but how important it is that every time you go out and do a consultation?
Well, it's honestly a debate about whether it's first or second on the list of like designing aspects on a piece of property. There's a debate between access or water. And I say they're the same. Like I don't view access and water as two separate things. Because, A, like you've made the point before, Dad, like if I have water but I have no access to it, then it's useless. It might as well not be there. But also, water can dictate your access. You don't want to put your access in the way of water systems or put water in the way of access points. But water, like if I have a ravine and I build a dam or a bridge, from one end of the edge side of the ravine to the other side of the ravine. I just dammed up that water and I created a pond at the same time, depending on where I put my spillway. But yeah, water, you should go in thinking, how do I work around the efficient water systems on a particular property? Not like, okay, I'm going to put my house here. Now, where can I put ponds? Should be the other way around. Where can I put ponds? What spaces are left for me to put a house? Where can I run my animals in between these systems? Now there's a lot of like passive, even structures that you can build to harvest water, and then ways to amplify and use water in different ways. So you can use like tromps, for example. So harvesting and managing your water and then using your water to fall down a tube with straws at the bottom of it that, you know, as the water falls, it compresses that air, and then you can capture that compressed air, and then you have compressed air on the property. That's one way to do it. Who's to say that it can't hit a water wheel before falling down that pipe, and then you're producing electricity at the same time, or you're milling something or whatever it may be. You can put in subterranean clay pots by your trees, and you can even put them in empty, and then as it rains, it'll fill. And then as the ground is saturated, it'll just maintain that water. And then as it dries out, it'll start leaching that water. That's a passive way to use water. Increasing the vegetation on your property is another way to increase the water on your property. Or increasing organic matter by, you know, the most efficient way is doing the grazing correctly. You can do swales. You can do terraces. You can do ponds. But there's one, whenever I was researching this topic, when Dad told me with the that we were going to do this topic again, there was one thing that I found that I've never heard of before, and it's freaking cool. I was looking up fog catchers, and I'm going to see if I can share this, Dad. But it's these Warka towers. Here we go. Can you guys see that?
Not so much.
Okay, let me click on a specific one. I guess these are the building processes of the Warka Tower. But this is the website where you get all the information on building Warka Towers. But they harvest, like you can kind of see that there. They harvest, they use nets, they use latticing, and all that stuff. And they use it to harvest the atmospheric water. And then it all drips down into this clay pot that's here in the center. Like here's kind of what it's starting to look like here. Like the finished product there, but it seems like an awesome, like if every community built a few of these in their like local, like meeting spots, like look at that. A, it doesn't look ugly, but B, it's a passive water collection. Even if it doesn't rain, it's just capturing water from the atmosphere. I thought that was just really neat.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how much it would actually produce, but yeah, there's I've never heard of those before. So that's kind of, But that's the thing. There are so many awesome, especially indigenous systems out there where they got it all figured out, especially where they are that we can. And that's exactly what Bill Mollison did, was that he essentially hijacked. Well, I hate to say that word. That's not what he did. He saw what these native communities were doing, and you can't do that now. I mean, he went to all these native places, saw how they were doing this stuff, and said, okay, yeah, how do we replicate this in the regular world? And that's really what that's how permaculture came about. William also said something I really want to kind of emphasize, because it ended up being a serious issue out on that area. Okay, we remediated that property by the river, and the people out there left for 3 months, left it, and when we went back over there and looked at it, my goodness, it looked like a complete jungle. They got back out there, and they mowed it plumb to the ground. Worst thing you can do. Worst thing, and the only reason we feel like that we have to do that in the modern society is because we were raised with lawns. It's heartbreaking what happened over there. So, and this is exactly what Jeff Lawton ran into to a certain extent with the Greening of the Desert project, is that you mow this stuff. Basically, when you mow or weed eat plumb to the soil, you're replicating having a bunch of goats in one area for way too long. Soil should never be uncovered, ever. That is the quickest way. We're talking about water. You want the quickest way to get the water off your land? That's, and to take the soil with it? That's the number one way to do it. So you never want to leave things bare, and you don't want to mow them so low because you don't want to go out there and mow so often. Look, if you're going to mow, put it on the highest setting. Ride that thing as high as you can, because as you're able to cool that soil surface temperature, your microbes, that's really what you're farming. It's not the grass, it's the microbes. Those microbes are so much happier the longer that grass is. So I never let my grass, if I can help it, get below a certain point. You never want to scalp that grass, and that's one of the quickest ways to get that water off your property. Other things that you might consider, also like swales and key line design. Once you get to that point, you're like, okay, what happens if I have a, okay, we got a rainstorm. And how do I integrate this stuff where William and I have done designs before where, let's say you got a pond and it has a swale coming off the end of it. Well, let's say that pond, you get so much rain that now the pond overflows. Okay, so you design it to where it backfills a swale. And then maybe from that swale has an overflow, a discharge that goes into another pond or maybe off your property completely, depending on how severe the storm may be. There are things you want to obviously cover there. Mulch and ground cover. I can't stress this enough, because in our Western culture, the biggest problem I see is people mow their grass too low or leave your animals in there way too long. Windbreaks and shade trees. That helps a great deal as well, especially in terms of your ponds and, you know, integration into your, some of your swales and stuff like that. Remember, a swale is a tree growing system anyway. Mm-hmm. So you could be doing both at the same time, depending on how it's situated.
Hey, so, real quick on that swale part, Dad, there is something I want to clear up with swales. Swales, you should pick swales if you intend on growing trees or providing shade for animals. Because I've noticed doing like a lot of consultations, people ask like, oh, should we put swales here? Not knowing that it is a tree growing system. The focus of it is a tree growing system. It's not necessarily the most efficient way to harvest water. Now, in addition to growing trees, it does help you direct water. So if you need to move water somewhere, definitely go with swales. But planting, if you're worried about water harvesting, digging swales isn't the most efficient route if you're not intending on growing trees at the same time.
Yeah. And those trees, like William said, remember, it's not just, nothing is in isolation. If I got a tree out there, why not put a guild around it? Why not grow other food around it? Why not put berry bushes in close proximity? Why not have things that vine up that mature tree when the time is right? Why not include all seven layers of a forest out there? So it could be a massive time and money saver just with good design, and then going right back to the water, you know, perennials as much as you can over annuals. Because with a perennial system, you're not going to disturb it nearly as much. Now, the yield, well, it depends on really what it is. But for example, why would I feel the need to go out there and grow grape tomatoes when I got these ones up here in the mountains called Tommy Toes that grow naturally? And it's a perennial system. I can just go out there. The tomatoes are okay. I mean, there are varieties that are cheaper, but this is a natural tomato. Has an electromagnetic barcode for my region. I didn't have to do any work. Why not get them off the side of the barn? I mean, those are so many different ways you can go about that sort of thing. But every time you don't have to disturb that soil, it's going to help you in so many different ways. I mean, obviously, management is really the number one key to a lot of this stuff. Your disaster is going to be a lot less if you are making sure that you are not scalping that ground, and most people are absolutely scalping the ground. So you want to avoid all that. Anything else you want to add, son?
No, other than people who need to put more thought into designing their water systems. Like naturally when people move to a piece of property or they have a piece of property, they first think of like putting in a garden, like make the whatever living structure livable, put in a garden, get a bunch of animals, and then we'll retrofit everything on the back end. You're going to be, I know you're not getting into what you want to do as soon as you want to do it, but you're going to be much better off if you first focus on designing water and comfortable access throughout your property. Do that first and then design your other systems around those things, and you'll have much better, especially if you can design your water higher up in the altitude and then your animals lower. Like your gardening systems, your animals are all lower than your water systems. Then you have a very passive homestead. But yeah, think about your water first, and then think about, or think about water and access first, and then think about everything else after that.
Yeah. Also, regarding that water, remember the number one place in which you can store that water is down in the soil. That's why you want to increase your organic matter as much as possible. And you can't do that when you scalp your soil. So increase that organic matter. And the one of the best ways to go on about that is A, not overgrazing with your animals, and B, using animals. Use them responsibly. So for every 1% of organic matter you get in that soil, you have about the water retaining capability of an Olympic-sized swimming pool per acre. Folks, do you know how much water that is? That is enormous. And that's for every 1%. Let's say you get up to 9%. And you get a gully washer through there. Good night. You're probably retaining all that. So what are you doing? You're putting it all back down into your aquifers. You're keeping it at the, you know, a horizon in your soil, a lot of it there whenever you need it. And everything is going to be more robust. Remember, there was 9 feet of topsoil when Lewis and Clark came across this country.
It was 20.
Well,
it was 20 feet of topsoil.
Okay. I guess it was 20. I stand corrected. Well, okay. So that's been our number one export, topsoil, right down to Mississippi. Why? Didn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. It's just poor management. What we're doing, folks, when I say we, I'm talking about classic farming. It's not even when a person says, I'm a soybean farmer. No, I'm thinking you're a miner. That's exactly what you are. You're not farming. You're not putting anything back. You're mining the soil. And just like we were talking about using that plastic, now you're completely reliant on chemicals. You're completely reliant on getting a, you got to keep busting up the compaction layer every single time because we are doing the polar opposite of what we should be doing. Folks, these are not difficult problems, but we're victims of comfort. We are victims of comfort, and we got to start turning that around because we are doing the polar opposite as a nation than what we ought to be doing to really, really make this nation sing in terms of its agriculture. Because honestly, we got all the necessary tools out there. It's just nobody wants to use them. Nobody really wants to use them. Just takes a little bit of know-how, a little bit of education. And what if those ag schools, son, overnight had to retool and start teaching, you know, permaculture design, or instead of doing what the big ag companies are telling them to do, maybe they were to bring in, let's say, we're going to bring in Joel Salatin, or we're going to bring in Greg Judy, or we're going to bring in Jim Garris. These are your new instructors now. How cool would it be if you had a so-called university where you would bring in the best regenerative ag teacher, and instead of sending these kids to these ag schools where all they're being, everything on that curriculum has been provided by the chemical companies. Okay. Is it any wonder we're going down this road? We're circling the drain right now. So I know this is a big requirement to change things around. I know this is not a speedboat. It's an ocean liner. And it's going to require a lot of effort. But you know what's cool about this is that you can start with your own place. Maybe people ask, gee, how are you doing that? And then they want to replicate it as well. So that's what it takes, folks. Anything else to add, son?
That's all I got.
Well, y'all, hopefully that was a blessing to you. Always a joy to come on here and hang out with everybody. So I want to give a hat tip to Renewed Homestead for handling the moderation in the chat. Want to give a hat tip to everybody out there listening to this program right now. Remember, until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
Now it's rain. We'll boost that run deep. Wisdom from Saul. Climb across the drain. Let the ideas unfold. I'm grooving with the truth. Feeling anxious. From the smallest sprout to harmony begin in the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune it to the beat, feel the fire and thrive.
Cultivate,
Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.